All right, happy Monday. Monday, you can trust that day. Here we are again on the show. What episode? 594. We keep going. Thanks to all of you out here. Well, a busy weekend for sure, right? Did you celebrate Green Day? You know, that St. Patty's Day? My friend Ryan and I got out to Twisted Arm, and we started in the afternoon and had a lot of fun. We met. It's one of the things about St. Patty's Day. It's kind of like Christmas. Lots of people come out that you haven't seen in a while, so you get to catch up. So it was nice to see some folks that I hadn't seen before or in quite some time, and some in a long, long time. Some I couldn't even remember. What's your name again? You know how you do that? And don't you hate it when you're like, you should know their name, and you're like, I don't want to ask, but I just get it out of the way. Says, I am so sorry. I can't remember your name right now. Oh, it's so-and-so. Oh, yeah, right on. So anyway, happy Monday, and hope you had a great St. Patty's Day. And then, of course, over the weekend, the Sarnia Sting would play. Just a real quick update. So they played Guelph and lost against Guelph, but then came back here on Saturday against Kingston and had a great win there as well. And we also celebrated Lee Cunningham, who's the main voice of the Sarnia Sting on CHOK, celebrated his 1,500th OHL broadcast, and he was recognized at the Sarnia Sting as well. So we're into playoffs, right, and getting really excited for that. We've got one more home game on Friday, and then away into playoffs we go. So it's really, really exciting times. Hey, I hope you'll take time to say hello in the chat right now or during the interview that I've got coming up here with Marilyn Gladue, our MP, and it's a really nice interview. But before we do, just a couple of things. I did send out a newsletter on Sunday about some things happening here with the show. If you haven't signed up for the show newsletter, there it is. Just go to the website at the bottom of your screen there, and we'll get you signed up and keep you informed about some things that you're not going to see on the Facebook page. You've got to have the newsletter to do it. And of course, I'd ask you to follow me, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, LinkedIn, everywhere. It's all at Dav Burrows. I couldn't get the David Burrows thing in there, but anyway. And of course, my YouTube channel as well. All right, so now that I got the commercials out of the way, I'm really excited to get into this one. Out in the community, Marilyn Gladue, your local MP here in Sarnia-Lambton. Of course, we talk some politics, but we really got personal about a lot of things. And from comedy to music to her new marriage. And, well, this is really quite fun. We had a lot of laughs, and we had some serious talks in there too, but a very intimate one-to-one conversation with Marilyn Gladue. Take a look. The show is made possible in part by its supporting sponsors. Blue Otter Power Group of Companies, Joe's Discount Tire, and AskGuy.ca. I'm always looking for amazing and wonderful, interesting people here in the community, and this is next on my list. Marilyn Gladue, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you, David, and thank you for what you do for the community, getting the news out there and letting us all know what's going on.
Well, I don't like the news thing. I'm the positive thing, right? You know, and maybe a little...
I think you tell a story. Yeah. Like, you like to get people's background and talk about important things in the community.
That's right. And so you had a Sarnia Sting game recently with your new husband, Paul.
Indeed, that was a thrill. That was his first game, and... it was a good one. The Sting didn't let us down. They won, and and so that was great. But yeah, it has been a year of joy for me, getting married again and getting a new house.
Right, exciting. Yeah, so. That was his first hockey game ever, or just first?
No,
Sting
no,
game?
His first Sting game. Oh, he's a diehard Toronto Maple Leafs fan. So clearly, a man
he's a
of
zealot.
Faith.
We call him zealots. Yes. and that kind of came up. Well, I remember Jennifer and I ran into you. I think it was Canada Day last year. And was asking, how's it going? Because you had mentioned the boyfriend. And then you mentioned then, I think there might be wedding bells. And we were like, oh my goodness. So happy for you. That's great.
Well, you know, it was quite a surprise. But I got married on my 60th birthday.
Oh, cool. So. Very good. Well, congratulations.
Thank you again.
Let's go back to the beginning, or almost as far as to the beginning as we can with you. You're originally from St. Catharines, right?
That's right, David.
Yeah, what brought you to Sarnia?
Well, I was in St. Catharines for 17 years, and then I went to Queen's University. I became a chemical engineer. Yeah. And when I graduated, I had three job opportunities. One in Trail, BC, population 12,000, and I don't ski. And the other two were in Sarnia. So I took the offer from Dow and started here in the research department in 1984.
Yeah.
And I've been here ever since.
You were at Dow for like what, 21 years?
21 years in a variety of roles. I did a lot of exciting things there, from helping to develop artificial kidneys for dialysis to working on plastic products to managing 254 global facilities. So that was a very exciting time. And then when Dow left, I had a family that didn't want to move to a different country, so I went to Suncor and was director of engineering there for a few years while we did that billion-dollar Genesis project.
Oh, yeah, right.
That was a great experience. And then from there, of course, everybody becomes a consultant, you know, more money, less work. And I went to Worley Parsons and worked at Shell for a number of years doing similar things that I was doing at Suncor, and then I became the business development director across North America and expanded from petrochemicals into nuclear, mining, renewables. So just a really...
It's quite a resume you've got going on there.
Quite a time. And then, of course, I was getting bored with that, so I took a turn to the dark side here and came into politics.
Right. Well, we'll get to that and how that all came about. But can we go into what was Marilyn Gladue like when you were a teenager? Were you a rebel?
No, I was, honestly, I was a Baptist youth leader, so I can take it from there pretty much by the rules. And a leader always involved, you know, whatever I was into. I was a musician. I had a band at the time, and
really?
I was leading that and leading the youth group. And then, of course, when I came to Sarnia, I did musical theater. So always had a little flair for writing songs, writing poetry, wrote a book, as you know.
Yep,
so
yep.
That's always been the challenge for me. When I applied to Queen's, it was in fine art, music, and engineering. Mm-hmm. And so I picked engineering. And then when I had my first job, first year after going to Queen's, I was offered to tour with a band in Northern Ontario or to work at the Ontario Paper Company in the chromatography lab.
Right.
I took the lab, but I always wonder.
Yeah, so who knows, right? Well, and you do sing. I know, I remember a few years ago we had you at Sarnia Sings. You were part of that.
I do something for charity, whatever I can do. That one was to raise money for mental health, Sarnia Sings. But I've also danced. I was with Dancing with the Stars. I've painted, and I'm a terrible painter. I'm not crafty in any way. But anything to, you know, help raise money in the community. I do all the triathlons and bicycle rides and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, you really have. And I've always wondered, like, how do you do it? Like, you know, like, because it's, I mean, I'm busy too, I get it, but I always say, like, there's 24 hours in a day for each of us. You just must have learned some really good time management.
I have a lot of energy, and certainly I'm a great organizer and scheduler, so, you know, I think I understand priorities too, so, and you have to keep yourself well. So, you know, if you start to do too many things, then you can endanger your health and then you're no good to anybody. So I try to keep a good balance, and Paul helps me do that now.
Right. What about family? Do you have children?
Yeah, I've got two children, and both of my girls, one is a teacher on Six Nations. She is pregnant with my second grandbaby.
Oh, nice.
So very happy about that. And the other one's a nurse in London. And so... you know, a wonderful family. Obviously, my brother's family is in the States, and so I'm central, so we get a lot of visitation from both sides, and that's fun. And my mother passed away in the pandemic, so that was, you know, everybody has got a sad story, I think, to
mine
tell
too.
From the pandemic.
Well, my dad as well, so I hear you.
Yeah. But, family and lots of friends.
Yeah, that's great. Did you know much about Sarnia, like, other than, like, the job that you were coming to? Did you know much about Sarnia in the community?
I knew nothing about Sarnia. I had a friend who was my roommate at university, and she had worked a summer job at Esso.
Okay.
So, you know, she told me, when I first came here, she was working as well. So she's the one that helped me figure out, you know, where to live. And there was a little brat pack of us that all the little engineers that came to town that used to get together. And have dinner and whatnot. But I didn't know much about Sarnia, but Sarnia looks a lot like St. Catharines, the Garden City. Like, I was going down the street, and it was, you know, in the spring when all the blooms are out, and I thought, this is very much, feels like home.
Yeah, I spend a few times a year in St. Catharines doing some work, and it was the first time I'd been there was like about 2 years ago, and I felt the same way. I was like, this feels
this
really familiar,
yeah, right, yeah.
You know, and a nice place to live. What's one of your favorite things about Sarnia?
The beach.
Yeah.
No question. I am a beach person. From the time I got here, I used to go in the morning down to Canaterra, and I'd be on the beach before everybody else got up. So it was all quiet and with the waves. And of course, I'm fair skinned, so in 20 minutes, I could be burnt on one side. And then I would flip over. And then when all the boom boxes came out, I'd go home and you know, do chores.
Right, right. What, you know, there's so much that goes on in Sarnia, and it's really, I find, super tight-knit. I mean, even when things need to be done, do you find that the people in the community, would you agree, they just, they all come together, if they don't like each other?
No, you know what? This community is one of the most collaborative in the country.
Yeah, that's what
everyone comments on that when they come here. Even competitors in business are working together for the betterment of the community. And it's a very generous community, so whenever a need is put out there, people come forward. Mm-hmm. Think of the Ukrainians. I was involved with the effort to help settle them, and the outpouring of generosity has been just, you know, super fantastic. And then I was a youth leader here for 32 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, helping troubled youth, dealing with families, people do come alongside and support one another here.
Yeah, I agree. So you're 21 years, you're an engineer. Did you monitor politics before you got into it?
Not at all.
So help us understand what happened there. Like, you woke up one day and just said, or you're...
Well, what happened was, I mean, I used to vote by who had the most signs, right? And so I voted every party over time since I moved to Sarnia, just by depending on who had the most signs. So that's why I always have lots of signs on my campaign. But when I was working for Dow and traveling globally and going to all these other countries in the world, I'd return and I'd think, you know, we got the best country in the world. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have a lot of confidence in politicians of the day. And, you know, not you know, anyone in particular. I just felt that perhaps they didn't have life experience about how business occurs globally, and what to do to grow the country and address the complicated issues. So I thought, well, I could, you know, just whine about it, like, you know, sort of Canadian way to just sort of talk about it at the coffee shop.
Right.
Or I could actually get involved.
Yeah.
And so just as I was thinking that, Bob Bailey called up and asked me to be an advisor on his riding association board, which seemed very coincidental, but kind of divine, maybe. So, and then about a month later, Pat Davidson, who was the sitting MP, asked me if I'd be an advisor on her board. So over a period of 10 years, I, you know, got to know what the different parties think, you know, how bills are passed, went to conventions, learned about nominations and candidacy. And then when Pat decided to retire, I was the president of her association.
Right.
And so I looked at those that presented, and there was a couple of nice guys that were going to run. But I thought, you know what, in terms of creating jobs and growth, we had 20% unemployment here amongst young people, 10% amongst the general population. I thought, I've just spent my time at Worley Parsons growing the office from 120 to 350 here, growing the Toronto office from 200 to 400, taking over some of the U.S. locations. Mm-hmm. So I think I have the skill that we need at this time.
Yeah.
So I was told, you have no political experience, you'll never win, but here I am. So anybody can win.
And so I imagine you had a lot of conversations with Pat and Bob about it, and who else would you have had conversations with that helped you come to the decision that I'm going to do this?
Well, I was actually involved supporting Bob in his campaigns and supporting Pat in her campaigns, and seeing what all the different roles on a campaign do. Mm-hmm. And so I did have a good background for that, and I was quite you know, organized. And for a nomination, if you spend more than $10,000 on a nomination, you have to get audited officially, and that costs another $4,000. So being, you know, conservative and penny pinching in nature, I basically, you know, got my family to do their donations so that I could manage myself, and it's a numbers game.
Right. Yeah, so you got the right people behind you too.
Got the right people behind me, and you know, had a lot of support from the existing Conservatives. And then the whole thing about becoming a candidate is to sell memberships. Mm-hmm. And because I had been involved in all the sports organizations, and as a youth leader, and as a singer, weddings, funerals, right. All of the
you could sell
churches,
all the, you
right?
could sell all the chocolate bars.
Well,
couldn't you?
You know what? I knew a lot of people to sell memberships to, so that was part of the win. But once I did win. Then, of course, I can remember door knocking and having people say, oh, I can just see you saying, Mr. Speaker, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, what are they talking about? Because I had never watched Question Period.
Right.
Not even once. I had no idea when I showed up in Parliament what it was going to be about. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
The first time they asked me to make a speech on the withdrawal of the CF-18s from the ISIS fight, mm-hmm. they said, would you be able to speak? I said, yeah, I could speak for a couple of minutes on that. And they said, well, no, it's 10 minutes or 20 minutes. I said, oh no, I think I can say everything I want to say in 2 minutes.
Right.
And they're like, that's not how it works.
Really? So, you're trying to save time and be
exactly.
conservative.
Well, the engineers are trained to do the right. 1 minute elevator speech. That's what we do.
That's
so,
right.
So I've had to learn, you know, how to be a little bit more long-winded.
Yeah. I think your favorite speech was the Grim Reaper.
Honestly, you know, all of these things, when taken out of context, can be bad. But originally, what that was supposed to be, Ron Ambrose, who was a great leader and a lot of fun, she thought it would be, you know, fun to have like a 1 minute or 2 minute thing, little skit sort of things mm-hmm. to, you know, just break
light,
up the mood.
Up
because, I mean,
bit.
We had just lost the 2015 election, yep. right? After a decade of the Conservatives being in power, the existing MPs were depressed in the extreme mm-hmm. and so she just thought this would be a great way of spicing things up. And so, you know, Arnold Viersen did a little rapper thing and I had my little Grim Reaper thing, but of course the press only cuts, they missed the whole part after the gloom and doom Grim Reaper when I take the outfit off and I'm in a Tory blue dress talking about our fresh perspective
right.
and where we need to focus in politics, right? Yeah. They missed that whole part. So.
Yeah.
There's always more
there
to
is
the story.
A video that covers it all, just so you know.
You know what? There, everything you do is out on video, and certainly, you
right.
know, I have kept it interesting. Yeah. I won't say that everything that's come out of my mouth is something that I wouldn't take back, but mm-hmm. I mean, it is what it is, and on the whole, I would say that I have represented well.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, like, there's a whole bunch of lions in the grass, right, Marilyn? When you're doing wonderful, some people will go, hey, good job, and then they keep walking. But when you really mess up, or they think you messed up, they just pounce.
Yeah.
And they, how, like, I think that's probably one thing that would stop me from wanting to get into politics at any level. I mean, you even look at municipal, you know, like,
it's
wow, that can get pretty crazy. And I think, do people forget that politicians are people?
Oh, they do. I mean, for 32 years, I was here in Sarnia, a very well-liked member of the community.
Yeah.
And overnight, the hatred and the vitriol on social media, I never shed a tear as a female engineer in the construction business in 32
right.
years. I cried every night for the first 3 weeks that I was elected because it was so awful. And I can remember my mother saying, well, what are you going to do? And I said, well, I'm elected now, so I'm just going to have to okay. not look at it. I can't mm-hmm. care about it. I shut my Twitter account down, mm-hmm. and I swore I'd never have another one, but the party persuaded me to change my
right.
mind. And I had to cleanse my Facebook account because I had let everyone join me. I thought, I need to hear from all constituents.
Yeah.
Well, some people just want to hate on you on a daily basis, so I don't want to hear what they have to say. I want to remain positive and do the right thing for the community.
Yeah, and that's but difficult at times to do. So what kind of things do you do? Like, okay, you shut down or cleanse the social media. But do you do anything to help with, like, I guess that would affect your mental health at some point, like if you really let
well,
that get
yes.
inside of you.
You know
right?
what? Really, there's a lot of people that struggle with their mental health. I was born fairly positive and joyous, but I would also say my parents were one of those suck it up buttercup kind of
right, yeah,
family,
yeah.
like toughen up when the mm-hmm. going gets tough, the tough get going, all that kind of thing. So I tend to take action. If something is not going well or I feel like you know, there's an issue, then I try to take an action to turn it back positive. Mm-hmm. And so you know, there have been down moments, obviously, the leadership race, running for the leadership and having my own party eliminate me from the race without cause. That was really tough. And then the whole Aaron O'Toole thing was also very difficult. I was really persecuted under his leadership. So those were tough things, but you know, we've come through them now, and we've got Pierre Poilievre, and I was his Ontario co-chair, where we've got a lot of momentum going on, and I'm going to a lot of the rallies in areas where, you know, you wouldn't expect, NDP land, and 2,500 people coming out, young people, women. So I feel very positive and excited about the future of the country.
You've I don't know if you know this or not, but you've really had a positive impact on women in general and local in the community. Do you realize that you've
Well,
done that?
You know what? It was not necessarily intentional. I mean, I was talking to a lot of women about being in politics, women in STEM, women in leadership, and sharing my experiences. Obviously, after 40 years of being around doing the thing, you do learn, you know, how to succeed and how to be resilient. Right. So, and what I found was women would see me in the role and they'd think, I can see myself there. Or she was able to stand up and speak about this. I'm able to stand up and speak about this. So I think, you know, just by doing what you do have an influence, but with that comes responsibility. People are watching. And so I need to make sure that I conduct myself in a way that I'd want others to follow my example.
Yeah. You must read a lot, I imagine.
Oh, it's
amazing. And I'm not just talking about the reports and everything, but...
Well, I do. I mean, every day I have to read National News Watch to keep up on what's happening in case somebody sticks a microphone in my face and says, what about this? Because there have been times when, you know, I didn't know what the news cycle was about. And you know, you don't want to look like you're not informed.
And then they're like, well, what do you mean you don't know? Because you don't have anything else to do.
Well, there was one time when the Trump administration was around, and there was one of the guys in his administration, Michael something or other, and there was some indictment. And so the reporters in the press gallery had gathered around me and said, there's just been breaking news about Michael and his indictment, and what do you have to say about that? I didn't even know who the guy was. So I said, I said, well, you know, I like to focus my energies on Canadian politics.
Good answer.
And so then they came back again, yeah, but this guy, blah, 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 what do you think? And I said, well, you know, there's been a lot of drama to the South, and I prefer to focus my priorities on Canadians and what we need to do here.
Right, good job.
And I went back to my office.
Alone, though, right?
No, I went back to my office, and I said to my staff, who's this Michael guy?
Right. We need to get caught up, or I need your help. And you do have a nice staff here that I'm sure is
great
a
staff.
Huge support for you, right?
Do you know what? We are one of, I think, the best constituents. Offices without a doubt in the country, because we hear all the time from people, you always call us back.
Yeah,
your office was so helpful. A lot of people call from other ridings and call into this riding because my own MP won't help me, but I heard that you are very helpful. And the staff here has done a great job. My staff in Ottawa is awesome, so just very blessed.
So the beach and music, do you still entertain yourself with music and that sort of thing?
Oh yeah, for sure. Now I don't have as much time to, I can't play in a band anymore. I had to give that up.
I bet you would have made a great rock star.
Oh, honestly, you know what? I enjoyed it so much, and I played the guitar and the keyboards and sang. It was just great. And I did make a CD actually. So,
oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah. There, oh. I try everything. David.
I'll have to find, find a copy
that one
of
up.
That.
Dig that one up.
Okay.
And yeah, I think with getting married, Paul and I met at a David Wilcox concert.
Oh
so we
gosh,
both have
awesome.
A love for concerts and music. And in fact, we're going on our honeymoon. We're going to Nashville.
Cool.
We've got tickets to Billy Joel and Stevie Nicks. Going to the Grand Ole Opry.
I have yet to see Billy Joel. Well.
Yeah, so music has always been a love, and we do enjoy it.
Yeah, great. Do you have anybody that you follow online? You know, like there's the Jordan Petersons or the Ben Shapiros, and then there's the Gary V's. Do you have anybody in particular that you follow on a YouTube or Instagram or a podcast?
Well, I follow a huge number of people, but a lot of times I expand the network of who I'm following for the role that I'm in.
Yeah.
So right now I'm the Shadow Minister for Civil Liberties.
Yeah.
So all of the constitutional lawyers, folks like Jordan Peterson, there's a huge number of cases before the court that have to do with the infringement of rights during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so we're awaiting the court decisions on those. But as a result, I'm following a lot of that and following what's happening in other countries. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and we've seen some local establishments that were charged and during the pandemic, and then those charges were dropped. Do you think sets a precedent now? Like, I mean, you know, well, they got, I don't want to say got away with it, but, you know, they were able to do that. So why should I have to pay my fine?
You know, I think.
I know you're not a lawyer. And I don't
no.
That,
for me, the basic tenet is we are under the rule of law. Mm-hmm. But that said, we also have a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And the Charter does allow the individual's rights to be infringed, but they're under very extreme circumstances. Mm-hmm. And while we could look at the first 3 weeks of the pandemic and say, look, if people didn't know, you know, what was this COVID? How should we react? You know, a lockdown, I think, was an appropriate thing to sort of mm-hmm. get the information and learn. But 2 years down the road, Canadians weren't free to, they were trapped in their own country, 4 million of them. That's a problem.
Yeah.
We had people who were fully vaccinated that didn't use their ArriveCan application and were forced to quarantine for 2 weeks and fined $9,000. I mean, there was all kinds of stories that I could tell you of the injustices that were done. And so we need to reflect back and say, okay, what are we going to do differently next time to make sure we don't see this same kind of infringement of people's rights?
Well, and if there was a next time, I always kind of felt like, you know, kind of the last time it was being considered again, I was like, I really hope we don't do this. Not just because of you know, finances on people, whatever, but I just felt like people have had enough. And if this happens again, I feared that people would react in a very negative, rebellious, if you will, way. And we've seen,
absolutely,
we saw some of that, you know,
yeah,
the trucks going down to Ottawa and that sort of thing.
Yeah, people were increasingly angry,
yeah,
you know,
right,
as the thing went on.
And anger's not an emotion we're all very good at dealing with.
No,
right?
and sadly, when you look at the data after the fact, and you look at Sweden, for example, who decided they weren't going to do anything, and everybody was very judgy about it at the beginning.
Yeah.
But if you look at their overall death rate, and now that we've come through it, they're one of the lowest.
Right.
So, you know, there is that. I'm not saying that, you know, there wasn't things that we should have done, but to see seniors that were kept away from their loved ones that died alone, these kind of things mm-hmm. like have left a lasting impact, and I don't think people are willing to have their rights as easily infringed, and they're more likely to be vocal about it.
Yeah. And at least thank goodness for like FaceTime or something like that. Can you imagine if this had happened in like 1975 or something, where all we had was a rotary dial phone, you know? We really would have been disconnected. So a lot's been learned from all governments, all people, on that side of things. But it certainly, would you say it turned the corner for people as like them speaking up more about things? And did it, because I found like people that I knew for a long, long time, all of a sudden, wow, you really think that way? The colors came out and, you know, relationships, marriages broke, you know, all kinds
of. Yeah, it was
very
divisive.
I can tell you five people I know that were married for years and then finally because of that. So has it really changed the way we think about things?
Well, I think it was certainly very divisive. And although I think people would tend to stand up more for their rights, they also lost their trust in government mm-hmm. because there was so much misinformation and lying going on, to be fair, that people started to say, well, what's the motivation of the government to do this to people? Why, you know, why did they fire people that were heroes at the beginning of all of this? You know, all the nurses, for example, my daughter's a nurse, they were all wearing their PPE and their masks and everything else. And there was no vaccines at the beginning. And so there they are, the heroes, and all of a sudden they all get fired, even though they're rapid testing and they're still wearing PPE. And 5 weeks after they get fired, there's an outbreak amongst all the vaccinated people because it's clear that everyone can get and transmit COVID. Then to put insult to injury, they wouldn't allow them to collect unemployment insurance. And unemployment insurance is like an insurance premium. You pay in, you have enough hours, you get it out. But it was a punishment on the part of the government. And so I think people really have lost their trust in government and in politicians in general.
How do we get back? How do we reestablish that trust? On and it doesn't matter whether you're PC, liberal, whatever you are.
You have to be transparent. Right? I think people have to see the facts, and I think it has to be okay to question the government of the day. Mm-hmm. To say, I don't agree with this. Let's have a discussion. Where's your data? You know, you say you're following science, but the science is saying something else. I think you got political science. So that has to be okay, and that kind of free, open discourse is essential to a democracy, and that's what's under threat today, I think, in our country.
And good to be transparent, but do you think on the other side of that coin, sometimes we, the people, expect the government to do everything for us? Like when there's a problem, the government should do this, and you should give me money for, I mean, we're dealing, again, mental health, and then there's palliative care, and there's all these things that go on. Do you think maybe sometimes, though, we rely on the government to fix everything? Or is the government supposed to be the
government,
fixer?
No, the government is not the answer for everything. And if you look at how good the government is at doing things like processing passports or immigration, 1.5 million backlog or anything, deal with CRA, whatever. Yeah. All I can say is that the government's the answer to some things. And the government needs to protect Canada's sovereignty. They need to prevail over the rule of law in our country. And they need to provide supports for Canadians. But they're certainly not the answer to everything. And I would say that people are starting to feel the impact of the government interfering in their own lives and their privacy too much.
And then the people trying to recover from all of this, I mean, businesses closing and whatever, it's affected our economy in some ways. There's those that would say, well, then, you know, there's opportunity that came from it in one sense. But I think for the most financially really suffered, right? You know,
people lost their livelihoods. People that built their businesses. Well, you know what? First, let's never go there again. Let's learn to do it better. And then I think, you know, we see $27 billion of money that was given to businesses that didn't need it, and the government's saying, well, it's too much effort to go get it back. Well, I resist that notion. $15 billion given to dead people and people that were in prison. Well, I think that's money that we should go after.
Yeah, right.
So, I mean,
but we'll go after the guy we gave one too many CERB checks to.
Hey, you know, didn't pay your interest of $80 on CRA, they're coming for you. So I think that we really need a bit of balance when it comes to what the government's involved in. And I'm concerned especially about our freedom of expression. You and I were talking
earlier. I don't want to do all politics, but we're doing good so far. But it is important. It's Bill C-11, right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the censorship bill.
I've heard about this. One of my viewers a couple of years ago actually started sending me messages. I'm like, well, it's not the kind of thing I get on my show. But then I saw more and how it could affect somebody like me having a show on the
internet.
You know
what? This could affect your show, because what they're doing with this bill, the government is going to determine the criteria of what content the CRTC is going to boost or bury.
Right.
So if they don't like your content, if they don't like this message that we're talking about today, they can downvote you in their algorithms, or they could actually block your content.
And I have other words for what CRTC stands for, but
the CRTC doesn't have the experience to do this. They've admitted that to me at committee when I asked the question, you know, do you have any experience in this? No. So that's dangerous in the first place. But the government should never be determining what people can say. Even Margaret Atwood, okay, is a Canadian icon, is critical of what the government is doing right now. And not just with C-11, but there's another bill, C-18. And that determines what Canadian content is. And Margaret Atwood doesn't qualify with her Handmaiden's Tale because it was the production companies headed in the U.S.
So now we're really becoming this censorship thing, right?
That is the worry. And the people who live
under... Why did this come about? Like, why was this brought forward? Like, what's the concern? There has to be enough of a concern, I think, to put a bill or present a bill.
Well, the reasoning the government has presented is that without this Bill C-11 that Canadian artists and Canadian content wouldn't succeed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a false premise. I think we've got all kinds of icons that are Canadian. Shania Twain, come on.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And so many more. Alanis Morissette. That we could go on and on with the talent of Canadians that has gone global. So I think that it's a false premise, but I think it's an opportunity for the government to get control over what you can post online. And that is communism, and I'm opposed to it, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I signed it. You can go to your Facebook page, and I know it's on there.
Yep, there's a petition there, and the bill has come back from the Senate. Now, the Senate did their sober second thought, and they came with an amendment that would exclude individual content. So if your content was not commercial content, and then it would not be included in the censorship. And the government has rejected that amendment. So that tells me they do want to censor individual content. That is communism. That is not the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
And this is a living for a lot of people. Like, I mean, I'm just a small piece in there, but I mean, I have sponsors. I have, and I can't imagine somebody like, Jordan Peterson or somebody who's...
I'm sure he'll be number one on the list of who they would like to, downvote.
But why? Why would they not want him to speak up, right?
Well, look, I don't agree with everything Jordan Peterson would say. Yeah, no, but I agree with his right to freely express it as long as it's not hate speech. I think, we do have a problem in the country with... hatred, hate speech, and we need better definitions about that because the threshold today is way too extreme. Yeah. And there's lots that we could improve by changing that definition.
So you've done you're in the midst of a second term now for yourself.
Yeah. You started. No, third.
Or third, right. Yep. Sorry. What was it back?
2015, 2019, right. 2021.
So.
And maybe 2023. Who knows?
Yeah. I won't ask that question. You're going to run again. You'll let us know, I'm sure.
Oh, I'll run again. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, there you go.
Spoiler alert.
Right. On a local level here, politically, what's the direction you think that we need to go in this, just on a local level?
Well, here in Sarnia, okay, the cost of living is a huge issue for us because we've got such a high percentage of seniors and people living on a fixed income. There is no affordable housing here. Mm-hmm. You know, this Earl's Court apartment that just burned down, 40 people displaced, there's no place for them to go. Mm-hmm. Some of them went to homeless shelters, some of them are couch surfing. But there's no place to go. And so we're trying to accelerate the building of spaces, but it's just not fast enough. And every day seniors are calling my office saying they're losing their houses. They can't afford to live. They're having to go back to work because of the highest inflation in 40 years. Grocery prices up 12%. You know, they're going to increase the carbon tax again. Triple. I know you love that one. And the escalator tax on beer and wine.
Come I was just going to say, we you just know. Heard Ups and Downs was talking about
Well,
that.
It's awful, and it's affecting businesses, it's affecting individuals. But when you're on a fixed income, the statistics are that half of Canadians can't pay their bills. They're going into debt. And that 60% of Canadians, if they had a surprise $500 bill arrive, they wouldn't be able to pay it.
So I hear what you're saying and all of that, but I was always kind of taught, like, okay, so housing costs are too high and da-da-da-da-da. So how do we get those prices? Because prices go up. They typically don't go down, right?
Well, Canada has the most land to build on. So the answer is supply and demand. Mm-hmm. Build more houses. You got more supply, the price goes down. That's right. The economic rule. And what I would say is cut taxes. Other G7 countries, when they saw inflationary things after the pandemic, took taxes off fuel, home heating, groceries. They recognized that people were suffering. What about the grocery stores that are making billions of dollars, more profit? Yeah. I mean, they can tell me that.
Jennifer came home the other day with a grocery bill, and I was like, what? Because I don't see it typically, right? She does that.
Honestly.
And she was telling me, I said, I need some more fruit. I'm all out of my fruit. And she's like, well, let me tell you.
Well, and I mean, I saw a loaf of bread the other day for $5. I was like, whoa. Right. But you know, this is what happens when you tax the farmers with carbon tax and a clean fuel standard tax, $150,000 each, let's say.
Yeah.
Then you're going to truck the grain to some place to process it, carbon tax on that fuel, and then carbon tax on the thing that's being processed. And then you're going to truck that bread to the grocery store again, your carbon tax. Like, it's an escalator. So we've just got to get a grip on the inflation because people can't afford to live.
What about the people in the sense of, like, you know, a lot of times we hear, like, go to school, get good grades, get a good job. But would you agree that that's kind of changed as to how we, like more entrepreneurs is where I was going with that?
Okay. So the answer to I can't afford to live is get a better job. So that's right. Either start your own business, or what about the trades? We have a huge need for trades, and that's a very well-paying job.
Yeah.
And so, you know, university is not always the answer. Sometimes having a better
not
life.
Not everybody wants to go to school either.
Well, like, not everybody should. You know, honestly, right? I don't need to find a professor when I'm having plumbing issues at my house. Right. I got to have somebody that knows how to fix that. And, you know, we need pipelines here in Sarnia, so we got to have pipeline welders and the like. So I think there is a big opportunity, and we have to generate more opportunity.
Yeah.
If you think about the deals that have been turned down, $59 billion Germany wanted to pay us for our LNG. We've got the most LNG. I think we're in the top five in the world. Well, why not sell them that? That's more than our health transfer payments. Think about what our healthcare system needs. We should be doing that. Japan made the same deal. We refused. I mean, these are opportunities that we need to take advantage of, I think, and grow our economy so that we can help people.
Yeah. Tough times ahead for that, for sure, yeah. To recover and to grow. Have we started in the right direction? Have we begun, like you talk about all these things we need to do, and wonderful, but have we begun doing that? Have people started rebuilding any trust with the government, or is that like that's because I feel like
I don't think
that's
so.
That's where it has to
begin. I mean, I don't think
all
so.
This,
if we look at issues of the day, this Chinese interference in the election, mm-hmm. and all the hiding, the government is hiding. They're not being open about it. At the beginning, the message went from "I've never been briefed," is what the prime minister says. I've not been briefed. To all of a sudden, we see he's been briefed multiple times, and then we don't know anything about the 11 candidates, and now we can track where their donations are. And then I'm going to. So, you know, instead of a public inquiry, we're going to have a special rapporteur. And now we find out it's David Johnson, who's also, incidentally, the head of the Trudeau Foundation. Well, I mean, why do people not trust the government? Because the government is doing things that look like conflict of interest, that yeah. look corrupt. And so, you know, I think the government has to ascribe to a higher standard. I'm a professional engineer. If I break the conflict of interest ethics rules of engineers, I lose my license. So, you know, it doesn't matter that Parliament's got those rules as well. I mean, I'd love to help them get their ethics training because I have to take it every year for my engineering license. But yeah, I think the behavior standard has to go up on all sides.
Yeah. What do you like to talk about when you're not talking about politics? Because I have to tell you, like, I really am enjoying this conversation. But even when you talk about politics, like, there's no, there doesn't seem to be any crap going on there. You know, like, you're very transparent when you speak, even if it means that you're admitting something maybe you made as an error, your own government, you admit right. we shouldn't have done this. Or
yeah.
So kudos to you for finding the way to do that.
Well, you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, I am a fact and evidence-based engineer. That's where right. we start. And I've always been, I'd say, opinionated and outspoken.
Yeah.
It's not always to my benefit, but I think I've been a straight shooter. And that's what people right. want. That is what people want from their politicians. They don't need to see word salad every day. That means
right,
nothing.
Yeah.
When I'm not talking about politics, what am I talking about? I'm talking about my family
yeah.
and my grandbabies and, yeah. You know, thinking about arts and entertainment and thinking about nutrition and new recipes and getting yeah. in shape.
Do
and
you
all
like
the
to
good
cook?
Stuff. Oh,
cook?
I love to cook. Yeah.
yeah. I don't
sure.
cook.
Well, you know, I love to cook, and I've been a collector of recipes as I've gone across the globe. Anything that I had somewhere, I've learned to make it. And then in the pandemic, of course, when everything was shut down, I had the opportunity to learn to make all the stuff I like
right.
that I used to go out to eat.
Yeah.
So now I can make it all. I got a ninja. So
that's,
that's my latest learning toy. And, you know, I think that it's fun to entertain. I like to have people over.
Yeah.
I talk about religion as well as politics.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that can be very controversial. And then Paul is broadening me out into the sports field.
Okay.
You know, I was a participant. I wasn't a watcher, but he's a watcher of hockey and a watcher of football and a watcher of golf.
Oh, wow.
And so I do spend a little bit of time now learning about this area that I wasn't really that interested in.
Right, right. And do you have a favorite team in hockey now because of Paul?
Well, I don't really. I used to, the family was a Montreal Canadiens fans, and I thought just to be contrary, I would be a Detroit Red Wings fan.
Right, yeah.
And now, you know, honestly, it's all the same to me. I think Sarnia Sting's my favorite team now because I've got a shirt and
yes,
you know,
I can
go and
enjoy it. Yes, you've got one that says glad you right on the back. That's how
what?
I spotted you all the way down the concourse.
So I think, you know, from a hockey point of view, that's it. Golf-wise, I'd rather play it than watch it, but it is impressive to watch because there's so much skill there. They do things that for sure I would never be able to do.
Yeah, I gave up golf years ago. I have a saying, Marilyn, I'm not a quitter, but I know what I'm beat. Right, so.
Yeah, it's good to know.
You've won quite a few awards too, like for in your politics, you know, for things that you've done. Like palliative care was one, if I recall.
Yes,
right.
Yes, palliative care. I won an award for that. I won the most collegial parliamentarian, voted by all my fellow members of the House twice. Once when I first got there, and they said, "Oh well, you just got here. You're nice, but just wait. After being locked up in this toxic place, that might change." But after 6 years, they voted again. I was made a fellow of the Canadian Academy of Engineers and Engineers Canada. I received the Seniors Award from Home Instead Home Care globally.
Oh, wow.
For all my work for advocacy for seniors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just goes on and on. I've got two private members' bills. The one is passed. The other one is in the Senate. And hopefully if that passes, I'll be one of less than 40 MPs that have ever passed two federal bills.
Wow.
So I'm proud of many of the things that I've done, and it's nice to be recognized.
Do you have a quote that you would say that you, sometimes we have a quote we live by, like, if you can't be on time, at least be early. Do you have a quote that you like from somebody?
Oh, I don't really have one, but my mantra is typically, like, every day is a new day. Try to do something good.
Yeah, yeah. And do you read, like we talked about the video thing or whatever, do you read books, like hardcover books?
I do.
Are you still into that?
I read hardcover books. I'm not a Kindle person.
Yeah.
And I like mystery, detective, FBI kind of stuff.
Yeah. You're not the romance type?
No, I had my day on that, and then I was married and divorced, and that kind of sort of brought too much reality. I don't even like reality shows or, you know, the Harlequin station or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't watch that. But yeah, and then I guess I do read a little bit of science fiction fantasy. I like all that kind of stuff. We're watching The Mandalorian right now. So.
I just watched three episodes of that last night.
Awesome.
I was like, oh, it's back. I didn't even
Loving
know.
It. So, yeah, and I mean, we're lucky with all these different streaming services that are out there now. There's so much to watch, and documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many interesting stories. So I don't have enough time to do all of that. And then people drop off about 30 books every week at my office. You simply must read this.
Right.
And that's, I may get to them.
Right. What about your book? Now, remind everybody the title.
It's called Tales of the Globetrot.
Yeah.
And it is quite a humorous story about me as a single female engineer traveling around the world and all the adventures that I had.
Yeah. And what inspired you, or what made you decide that, I'm doing politics and I do this and I do that. Oh, and I've got time to write a book. Like,
well, it was the pandemic, right? They shut things down.
Yeah.
I was busy running for the leadership of the Conservative Party, and then all of a sudden, boom, everybody has to go home and be locked up. So after I did a few jigsaw puzzles, I was quite bored. And a girlfriend of mine said, well, you're always saying that you wanted to write a book. Why don't you write a book? So I thought, well, okay, I will. So I started making a list of all the places I'd been, and then I got this idea, and I thought, okay, I'll go for it. So the book was written between March and June and published by November. And I learned all about the publishing process, which is, you know, fascinating.
What's fascinating about it? Because I would think that would be quite a process.
Well, okay, so you find a publisher, and then depending on what you need, there's all kinds of services the publishers can do. The first thing that they will do is they'll take the draft of your book and they'll give you an editorial review. And that's where somebody basically says, this is garbage, or, you know, you have a great voice, but, you know, here's some areas that you might want to think about, or we don't like. And in my book, they didn't like the chronology. I had gone around and around and around the globe and decided to take that tact, and they wanted to change it and make it time chronology. So we did that. And then, you know, if you need marketing help, you just decide which distribution you want. Do you want it on Amazon? Do you want it on Kindle? Do you want it in chapters? Like, where do you want it? And the pricing structure, and then there's all the different graphics for the cover. And it's quite interesting and to see the way that the royalties
go. So it was fun
go.
To put it together then?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely a great learning experience. And I mean, I'm sure my family and friends read it and a few others, but we didn't sell like millions. So
I don't have my copy yet. Where do I get one?
Well, you know, you could get it here at the bookkeeper because the bookkeeper was there, or you can go on Amazon, still on Amazon.
All right. Because it's something on my to-do list that I haven't got to yet, but I know I've talked to many local people like yourself who've written books, and then I think, well, boy, like if they can do it, like I should be able to tell stories.
Yeah, you know what? It's great fun, and I don't know if you. There's a lot of politicians that started writing books at the time that I was writing mine, and some of them were excellent. Like Jody Wilson-Raybould wrote two books, and she's on her third now. Very well written. This is a woman that is trying to solve the reconciliation of the Indigenous people to Canadians with the Indian Act and the whole thing. This is somebody who's been a chief, who's been an MP, who's been a lawyer, who understands all the angles of it. It's fascinating. And so, I read lots of different kinds of books.
So if you're not going to be doing politics someday and not engineering, you can't choose that one. What would you be doing?
Well, I think I'm not a person to sit and knit. So I would imagine that my experience is going to be valuable probably on directing boards of some sort. There's a lot of different businesses that need to know how to deal with government, how to improve. I know just here, Origin Materials, I went for a tour one day when they were first starting, and there was a lot of equipment that was laying around, and I said, oh, well, you're going to have some difficulty because of the preservation here. When I was in charge of building an onshore gas plant that was abandoned in Russia, they had all these different problems. So I outlined all the different problems, and they were like, wow, we never even would have thought of those.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes your experience is valuable.
I could see you being a public speaker.
I could.
I mean,
I
you kind be. Of sort of are, but I mean, you yeah. could be out there talking
I could
about
be an
your
inspirational
experience.
Speaker. Right? I could.
Yeah. Yeah. Your experience with the government, your likes and your dislikes of the government.
Yeah.
And
I could go back to stand-up comedy.
Have you ever done that?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, when I was younger, I did stand-up.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Well, you know, it started out when I was a camp counselor.
I could totally see you doing it, by the way.
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, some people think I'm funny. Some people think I'm not. But it's not a great skill for a politician. But when I was a camp counselor, you know, kids would show up. They'd be there for a week, and then we'd have a skit night. And that's how it started. Oh, yeah. I used to, you know, mimic people and make fun of them and do a little routine stand-up, and it was quite funny. And then I started to, at university, do open mic and whatnot, and found that I was apparently good at it and apparently good at mimicking different pop stars and, you know,
like
picking out funny things,
kind of thing.
Impressionists
yeah, yeah.
and all that kind of thing. So, and then, you know, once I got out of university, I was mostly writing trite poetry, as they would say, and somebody would have an anniversary or something, they'd want a little comic verse, and I would put something together, and so... I've done a little bit of that in politics, but wasn't well received. So I think I did four poems in my 8 years and got hated all over everything for all of them. So I decided not to do those, even though I got like 3 million views on every one of them.
Right.
Like it was a very effective way to get a message out.
There you go. I could totally, you could have been like the female Rich Little.
Well, I'm not that little, as you know, but yeah, I could have been on that theme. But I like to have a sense of humor, and I think it helps to balance you in this work.
Yeah. Have you seen, do you have a favorite comedian?
I've got a whole bunch of them for sure, but Ron White I love. And Danny Boy, I don't know if you've seen him, but he's hilarious. I just watched a special with him.
Love Ron White though.
Yeah.
I watched him the other day too.
Honestly, like he's so funny.
Yeah.
So I Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
You know, he's funny. I watched the Chris Rock special.
So I was leading you somewhere, but you read my mind.
Good.
So the Chris Rock, outrageous.
Yeah.
And if you haven't watched it yet, you should probably
selective
have heard
outrage.
About it by now. Or selective outrage, right? And he responds to Will Smith, finally.
Yeah.
Do you think he did it well?
I do. Like, I, you know, I don't think that...
I was 100% okay with it.
I just think that, you know, I respect him greatly because he did not react at the time. He de-escalated the situation. He was quiet about it for a year, and I'm sure that was personally difficult for him. But he used his skill to come out and say what everybody was thinking, I think.
That's why
it's funny, you know, with what he has to say. And you know, I think he's a great comedian and certainly made me laugh.
Yeah, right on. Marilyn, I'm sure I could talk to you for hours, but then neither of us would get any work done ever. So
thank you
so much for welcoming me. We will, 100%. I really appreciate you and what you're doing for not just in our community, but throughout the province and the country, quite honestly.
Well, I'm going to keep standing up for what's right and trying to do good things for Sarnia-Lambton.
All right, there you go. Marilyn Gadoo, your MP here in Sarnia-Lambton. And thanks for watching, everybody.
Marilyn, just really, really enjoyed that. Got down to her office and the conversation before the camera, after the camera was great too. And just a great interview. Marilyn, thank you so much for giving me your time. She's very, very busy. So for me to have a little more than an hour of her time, super, super grateful. Thank you so much, Marilyn. And thanks for the interview. Listen, folks, take the time to click the share button so we can share the message of Marilyn's story here. It's a fun one, I think, you know, and I think some people would be interested to know a little more about Marilyn Gladue. But that's all the time I got for you this week, everybody. Have a great week and an even better weekend. I will see you next time right here on the show. I think I got it. I wasn't ready. There we go. Bye-bye for now. There it is. See ya.